on. Okay, so it's 6 o'clock on November 14, 2019. We're going to open the Boulder Town Planning Commission meeting. And we'll start with our old business, approving the October minutes.
I make a motion to approve the October minutes.
Does anybody have any comments on the minutes? I guess I should ask. I'm sorry. No, Elizabeth, did you have any comments on? Okay, so go ahead and vote on approving the October minutes. Make a motion.
I was looking at the wrong number.
Yes. Did you just vote?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, let's do it officially. So I'll make a motion to approve the October minutes.
Yes, thank you.
My second motion?
Everyone in favor?
In favor. I don't know. I think one, two, does she vote tonight? Marion?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, we'll go into new business, and we usually start with initial public comments. The podium is on that side of the building, and so if you have a comment, please come to the podium and state your name for Peg so she can hear that clearly. And does anyone have any comments?
I'm sorry, what? Can you ask me to speak louder? Oh, could you please speak louder?
Yeah. So right now we're in initial public comment, so if anyone has a comment to make, they can come to the podium and state their name, and actually we're going to move it back to where it usually is. Got it? Before we start on going through the agenda. So I think I'll go ahead and close the public comments. I don't think that anyone has anything to comment on. So we'll start with a public hearing on Fuller and Fogle residential short-term rental CUP application. Actually, I think we want... So... Curtis, I was going to say, do you want to go ahead and introduce
that? And then we'll... After we get all the information out to everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Lights, please.
And...
Popcorn?
You have popcorn. Is Alex Fuller here yet? Okay. Did you want a copy of all this?
Sure.
Okay. I'll introduce it first, and then I'll give it all to you, and I'll call you up, and I'll set it here on the board. It's not in very good order, but I just...
That's all right.
All right. But I'll have it on the screen here, so we can even refer to something.
So
this is the... This is Alex and her husband's application for a residential short-term rental conditional use permit. The application is complete. It was advertised in the newspaper. I got a 10-day notice for a public hearing. And this is the addendum that I put together that goes with the permit. And this lists everything in sections 5 and 6 of the residential short-term rental ordinance. So it basically goes down through all of the items in the ordinance, which I have a hard time seeing. So the major, Alexander Fuller and Sam Fogle, was the owners of the property. There's a sketch attached, which we'll get to. There's a pictures of the parking spaces, smoke detectors, exits, fire extinguishers, There's proof of legal residency, which is required under our ordinance unless it's grandfathered. It's not. There's a list of the guest instructions, which Alex can field questions for you. It's attached here. I've sent all of this material to the PC earlier. The business license will not be required until the condition use permit is granted, but the sales tax license is attached and it's already been secured. Proof of culinary water is attached. And then the property management, the way the property manager lays out, and how that will be handled is attached. I can't remember, Alex can address this when you come up, but I can't remember when you guys are out of town, who your backup property manager will be.
Nick.
Who's
listed?
Yeah.
Nick.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so here's her letter, which she can just explain verbally. Mm-hmm. Here's a plan of the property. On the left side over here is Lower Boulder Road. The access is dark and dim. There's the barn right here. Here's the house. These are two 10-acre lots, a total of 20 acres. This is the property identification as required by the ordinance out on Lower Boulder Road so that the guests can find it. Here's a picture of the house that shows several parking spaces available. As I understand it, oh, there's someone living downstairs in the house, now I remember. And then occasionally the upstairs will be what's for rent when the owners are out of town. These photos show the smoke detectors as required by the ordinance. They show exit doors, and they show fire extinguisher. The proof of ownership is attached in the form of a warranty deed. There's the water rights addendum for the property, meets code. I had in the ordinance that for them to provide a tax notice, but since I last did this, I called Kay, the assessor, and said, my tax notice no longer says residence, primary residence, secondary. And he said, yeah, they changed that designation for some reason. So now I have to change that to either a driver's license or a voter registration card to show that this is your primary residence. So this is a copy of their, from the county, their ballot. Here's part of her guest instructions, finding people out, what to do, how to use the place, the quiet hours, Boulder's dark sky, aspires to be at least. And Alex will review this stuff with you verbally better than I can. And I can go back to any of these pages that need to. If it feels like I'm kind of moving quickly, it's because I am. There's the sales tax license. Water, septic permit. So I'll just keep this available so that when Alex wants to draw your attention to a particular page or a planning commission member has a question, I'll flash back to that page so that you have an illustration. That helps you.
Two separate apartments, totally closed off. For those who were there in the earlier days, they're not
And there's an internal door between them, but they're not, they're separate walled off apartments now, not a sort of kind of separate apartments. They're separate now. So we'd love to be able to recoup our investment to move here when we travel some and rent out the upstairs for short-term rental. It also feels like a nice way to help us offset. We rent out the downstairs to a local, but the rents are really depressed here, so we lose money every month renting out the downstairs apartment, which we are happy to do for a good person and feel like a good thing to do for the community, but also feels like a nice way to balance out the income there and be able to, recoup a little short-term income there to help offset the money we lose by paying out kind of long-term rents downstairs. What questions can I answer for everybody?
I have a question. Hi, Alex. I'm Josie News. It's nice to meet you. I've seen your name a lot. That property, originally when it was subdivided, it was the Baker Ranch. And it was subdivided with a covenant and a deed restriction of no more than one single family home on a 10-acre piece.
Yes.
Right now, that is in compliance. You have an apartment and a home and 20 acres. Mm-hmm. So my question is, when you're using this as a short-term rental, it will be when you vacated property and another person is renting your portion of the home?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. My position, and we talked a little bit about deed restrictions, but and the enforcement of deed restrictions, so typically that comes from an HOA, a homeowners association, but in the event that there is not an HOA, which is this case, it goes back to the original writer of that covenant, which would be Bill Muse, and that right of enforcement passes on to the heirs, which would be me. So my concern is that if I sign off on a conditional use permit, I would have to have that, either in that permit or a resolution that would state that there would be no more than two occupancies on the 20 acres. Otherwise, if I would be forced in the future to file an injunction,
yeah,
I wouldn't want to have voted yes in the knowledge that there would be more than two.
I guess I'm confused. You're saying that the two property, they're two totally separately deeded lots.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the density to that was one single family home per 10 acres.
On each, yeah.
And so you're good.
Yeah.
But in the event that you were going to use the barn, or if you were going to have more rental in the house and turn that into three, that it would be not in compliance with that covenant.
Even though this house was built this way with two apartments when you get built.
So the history of that is because it was...
Can I interrupt you perhaps? I'm sorry. I wouldn't if it weren't important. I'm very reluctant to have you go on the record as a member of the Planning Commission discussing something that is entirely separate, that is a private matter between you and her.
It's a legal matter. It's a deed restriction. And my question is, when it comes to deed restriction and ordinances, we're required to follow both. In this case, the more restrictive is the covenant. Now, where's the town's liability on that if they knowingly sign off in violation of that deed restriction?
Where are you finding in the ordinances that it's the...
It's not in our ordinances, it's law.
I've actually never seen that deed restriction. That wasn't...
And that's interesting, because deed restrictions are in perpetuity. They pass from owner to owner. And the only way to remove those is to, one, either go through a homeowners association, which is not the case. It goes back to the original writer. That has to be in writing, and it's typically through a court process. Now, you follow the history of your deed, and it's there, but I see on your application it's not. And that's no fault of yours. Yeah, that's no fault of yours. But that's fraud. I mean, it's a deed restriction. It carries with the deed. Again, not your fault. But knowing that I have the right to enforce it, and as a vote on the CUP?
Okay, but it's very clear in municipal law that the town does not get in the middle of civil disputes between parties, and you can't. And quite frankly, you really should recuse yourself from a discussion on this panel, because you're in an official capacity here as a planning commission member, and now you're disclosing a conflict. So,
because I see,
I see
that it's a conflict in the town. How can the town approve something that they know there's a restriction?
The town can't enforce the restriction, can't even get involved. It's like an easement problem or something like that. What the town does is say, you need to go work it out or something, but it's a civil matter, and we don't have anything that allows us to enforce it or even get involved in it or choose sites, and we really don't. And I've confronted this before. And
well, then I would have to recuse myself from the vote. I do have that right of enforcement on this particular, on that subject.
And that may be totally true or not. I have no knowledge of how, what the deed restriction says or anything about it, but all I'm saying is, what I do know is this is the inappropriate venue in your official capacity to address it during this hearing.
May I address it then? If when the time comes for us to pose questions, because this is an open hearing, is it not?
No.
There's a public hearing that's going to be following this.
Okay, well, I can wait my turn.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine, but I see that as...
Sorry.
You really need
to recuse yourself then.
I can do that.
Okay.
But I think the town needs to be aware of it, and so I can speak at the public hearing.
Well, that was exciting to learn.
We've
got something with some things attached that we weren't made aware of, I guess. So.
It looks like it from can't be controlled.
Okay, well, I guess beyond that issue, what else can I
So, Curtis, is this the time to address a few inconsistencies on the application?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So it looks really good, Alex. There are just two things on under the number six, property management, which is the ordinance for the RSTRs.
Yep.
You know, and you've written out your thing on there. There are just a couple of things that, according to our ordinance, should be added to it. One is you provide verbal instructions of property lines and so on, but also ask to put a map in for your guest instructions.
Okay.
So they're visibly very aware of where they're going. So that's one. And the other is if an outdoor fire pit, barbecue, or similar device is available on the property, the fire restrictions for the area need to be clearly posted. So if you have any fire pit or barbecue, that needs to be...
Yeah, there's a barbecue on the deck.
So that should be listed in fire extinguisher. And I think those are the only two things that I saw.
Yep. If I add those things, then do I just send them electronically to be added to the application?
Yes, that'd be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, everything electronic.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Before I had that addendum done, you had already made 5 copies of everything. I apologize for the trees and...
What
else
can I answer?
That's all I have.
Elizabeth? Can I do anything?
I just was wondering, to be a full-time resident here, you have to live in the home more than 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be gone 50% of the time?
You passed as a planning commission. The town council actually removed that sentence, right? So now it reads that you cannot rent it out more than 182 days of the year, half a year, but they removed the sentence that it'd be occupied 183 days a year.
Okay.
But you still can't rent it out more than 182 days.
Right.
I have a question. So you rent the downstairs as an apartment. Is that considered? So we're not talking about a residence any longer. I mean, a single family home. It seems like we're not.
It has one set. It has one mechanical room and one set of services to it. But when we bought it, the downstairs was like a kind of separate apartment, and that's how we've kept it.
Right, so that's a separate apartment downstairs. Mm-hmm. Is that considered an ADU?
Yes.
And so then when it's rented out, so it can only be one or the other, correct? It can either be an ADU or an RSTR. Is that correct?
It's very similar to the next application, where you can have an ADU.
Okay.
You can have the primary resident. You can rent out all or part of the primary resident, all or part of the ADU, but only one guest transaction at a time. You cannot rent out both or all of the above. So you can only have one occupied at a time. So you have to do the property. The property can only be occupied as a vacation rental one at a time.
But someone long-term can live in the other.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no restriction on rentals 30 days or more.
Okay. Okay, any other questions for the town council?
No.
I mean, for the planning commission? I'm sorry. Okay, so I think that's all we need from you, Alex. Well, actually, should we just have her stay there? Because we'll go ahead and make a motion then to open the public.
Well, if there's no more questions, then she could take a seat, and then we'll open the public hearing, and the public can come up and
close the regular meeting, open the public hearing.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so
I make a motion to close the regular meeting.
Second it.
Aye.
I make a motion to open the public hearing.
I second that motion.
Aye.
All in favor?
So now the public is open to come to the podium and to please say your name, and if you have any statements, questions, or anything, you feel free.
May I approach the podium?
Yes. And you don't have
just
to
be clear, you think about it. You can recuse yourself from this entire portion, and then you can address as a member of the public.
That's my intent.
But
I won't.
Yeah, but you can't comment and you can't vote.
Yep.
Okay. I was hoping that Josie can handle this for me because of my.
Well, I can.
Well, you can.
Yeah, well,
you want
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
just to make clear to you, Mrs. Hanson, and I did meet your husband. Oh, it's been a week or two ago, and we discussed things about your property, and he was aware, I think, that you had this 10-acre stipulation on both your properties. Are you aware of that?
We knew we could build a new one on one lot and then have the existing house on the other.
Okay. I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
This is the deed that I gave to John Corvalli, Troy Chapman, and Greg Lynn several years ago back in 1998. Mm-hmm. It was on the original 30 acres that I sold them. It was an undivided 30 acres. I'm not the one that's clear. And it reads this, and it stays on the deed in perpetuity. And so I think Bevan should have passed this on. And here it is.
Huh? I think so too.
I think, yes. Okay, I'm the grantor, and the grantee, which is both men, grant that said parcels shall not be developed into a density of less than one single family home for 10 acres. Object the title company. I've had Josie check the law. It's there till I take it off. Now, it's not just you. This is actually the second party parcel of 30 acres that I did with that group, with that. and it goes to the Wyandot Ranch. They were the first person I sold land to on that development. And it has, and they have honored this since then all the way through, even when they did their dividing up of property between Pete and Cookie and the professor and his wife.
Buck and Lisa.
Yeah.
And Watson.
And it's the very same thing. I put it on all of us. Here it is. So why not Ranch? Describes all the property and that, the irrigation and everything. And then it says, grantee agrees that said parcels shall not be developed into a density of less than one single family home for 10 acres. And you can see on their property up there, it's done very nicely. They have Pete and Cookie's home. They have Keith and Lisa's home.
Good. Do you mind if you take a look at this? Can I look at this?
Yeah.
I can read that language.
Well, yeah, it's the same language on all of them, so let me give you that in a minute. Okay. But I will give you Pete and Cookie's right now.
I'd like to see the ones in question.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay, thank you.
And on their parcel, it was an undivided 32, 33, some odd acres, and went to the Wyandot Ranch. They hadn't split anything up at the time. And you can see they've got to pick up each a home, and then there is one rental. And I don't know who owns it or if they own it together, but that uses up the three on the 33. You bought two 10-acre parcels, and you bought the Court Valley parcel. And I know your husband had told me he went up and talked with John, and it seemed to be quite impressed with John. As am I. I have no problem with him. Troy Chamblee is the other person that had, but I don't know if you know that, but it was Troy Chamblee. And then the third piece down there belongs to Mr. Kelly, and Mr. Kelly bought it from Greg Wendt. But it also has that same covenant on it. Why your two on the warranty deed that just came up does not show it. I can only think, because I know it did survive and the others, that the other didn't have rights to it.
Okay, so.
So, what I am saying is that, you got it? I'll continue on and just finish so I don't have to get up for you. Anyway, that's the warranty deed on the county, and there will be others in between you. But it never goes off unless I take it off.
Okay. Thank you.
Did I say that right? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, just to finish that, because we're going to have this, just are we discussing yours tonight?
I believe this.
Okay. Your warranty deed has to do with a division of 1, 2, 3 lots. Lot number one is Matt Collins. Buyer agrees that he will not develop this property into a density of less than one single family home for 10 acres. That was just issued when Matt bought it, but the covenant's been on there a long time. As do the other two lots, lots 3 and 4. Your lot is lot number 2, and you bought it from Gordon Bosworth.
Yeah, just keep going.
And there's a lot to do. And so,
Okay. It's all right. It's okay. Just go ahead.
Okay. And yours has the same restriction. Does it show on your deed? I've never looked up your deed.
We don't need to talk about it now. I need to look into it and then I can get back to you about that.
Okay. Well then, having said that, it's also, and I can prove it when needed, on every single other property in that whole piece of ground I bought from Kelly Rand.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay. Oh, good. There you are.
Okay. I just, I think that was explained well. I think that, oh, I'm sorry. This is Josie Muse. And I think, you know, in perpetuity is explained for deed restrictions that it should be there. We don't, you know, understand why, but it does carry on. But I want to talk about the spirit of it. And the reason that there are these density restrictions on that land. Okay, so the Old Baker Ranch, it was our desire, after seeing what has happened across the state of Utah on overdevelopment and bad planning on our rural communities, is to not have overdevelopment when these ranches started to split up, right? And so if you go in the spirit, if you go look at the subdivision today, 22 years after this covenant was put on there, and you go down the road, which was put in by Dean Hanson when he did his subdivision, you look down onto the Old Baker Ranch. It's beautiful. It's aesthetic. The houses are clustered back in the trees. The pastures are open. The open space has been preserved. Okay, so that's why we're talking about it tonight, because we have compensated our zoning density by passing the ADUs and the residential short-term rentals, right? Now, I voted yes on ADUs because I agree in mother-in-law housing, but like anything that passes, there's always these riders where there was the additional rental unit and doubling the density in our zones. I had to go along with that because I agree on the other, right? I voted no on short-term rentals because I don't agree on doubling density in this town, you know, to promote industrial tourism. And it carries over to this. You know, we had the foresight to see development 22 years ago, and it stays today. You know, we don't want to see the density increase down there. As beautiful as it is, we need to preserve our spaces, and that's in the spirit of the general plan. And that's in the spirit of our cultural heritage here.
Are there any other comments?
I've got one more if I can do it twice. But if I can do it, I'll sit down.
I think we understand your position clearly, Bill.
Do you make the decision or does he?
Well, we have a lot to do. I mean,
okay.
All I have to say basically is, like he said, is it have to do with, I just want to talk about Fuller and Fogle. Does it have to do with Fuller and Fogle?
It does, but maybe we could talk privately, so, or with your husband, and we'll go with Jocko Valley so that you understand. So we're not being mean people. It has to do with long-term development programs. And I put it on the other side of the street, as far as you can see, with the Jefferson Ranch, too.
So we don't have any other public comments, is that correct?
Unless someone else wants to comment.
So we have no other public comments at this time. Okay, so I would like to make a motion to close the public hearing. Anybody?
I'll make a motion and close the public hearing.
Second that motion.
And aye.
I make a motion to go back to the Planning Commission regular meeting.
Second that motion.
Regular meeting.
Okay, yes.
In light of this development, I think that it would be a appropriate, and this is what most municipalities would do, even though you are not allowed to consider that deed restrictions in your deliberation. It cannot be a part of this. However, an issue has come up between parties, and there's been a conflict, and so I would suggest that you table it for 30 days to allow those parties to get together and discuss it, because apparently, you know, Alex wasn't even aware of this.
I can see that.
And so they need to get together, they need to talk about it, and it's not something that you have the power to resolve, but you do have the power to table something to allow that to get worked out so that you can move forward, you know. And if it can't be resolved in that 30 days, then I think you have to bring it back on and just submit it to a vote under the terms of our ordinance. But I think it would be fair to table it.
So, do we make a motion on that? So, I make a motion that we table the Fuller residential short-term rental CUP application until the next meeting, which will be in 30 days. Is that 30 days, or is that okay?
Yeah.
Instead of 30 days the next meeting, until the December meeting. So I made the motion.
I'll second that motion.
And we'll vote. A, yes, in favor. Okay. All right, so then what we're going to do is move on. So that closes the public hearing. We do have several other things, conceptual plans, and we'll go down the list, and we're going to start with an initial review of the Julian RSTR CUP application. Or
okay.
Do we not?
I'll just address that as I go through this. No, it's on the agenda. We can go through it.
Okay.
We'll do it with the caveat that, because this is not a for public hearing,
right.
It's a preliminary work, a look to save time at the December meeting.
Okay.
And I think we can note for the record all of the comments that were made about the property apply to this. And so and this is not a for public hearing or a decision tonight.
Right. Right.
So, no decision or vote is required tonight. So we'll gain an understanding of it, and we'll just state on the record that there is a potential civil conflict between landowners or grantees and grantors that they need to take some time to discuss and see if they can resolve it. So here's the applicant's application. Okay, I'm going to skip over this stuff and down to the plot plan. Here's the property. Most of you are probably familiar with it. Here is the ADU. Here's the main house. The application is for the property. As I said earlier, you can only have one transaction at a time, and that transaction cannot exceed half the year in terms of rental or occupancy. Here's a picture of the sign identifying the property for the renters out on the outside. And in this day and age of smartphones and navigation apps and so forth, and the county recorder now has good records, and they tie in with all of these apps. So it's much easier for people to find the property now without bothering neighbors and knocking on doors. This shows where the smoke alarms and the other necessary things are located. There are the smoke alarms, there's the fire extinguisher, here's the proof of residency, registered voters. This is their guest instructions. There's the sales tax license. The business license would not be secured unless and until the conditional use permit is granted. There's the water certificate. There's the septic permit. And there's their emergency contacts and their alternate property manager. So I've certified the application as complete and asked that it be put on the agenda in accordance with the ordinance. And so now the applicant can address it and answer any questions you have.
So in light of the deed restriction thing, that obviously shines a bit of a new light on the whole deal. We obviously didn't know anything about this either, so we don't have any comment there at the moment. That being said, the way that you described it, and I didn't get a chance to look at it yet, neither one of these applications seem to violate that in any way, shape, or form, because this application is for a room in our house as of now, and doesn't authorize the use of any other single-family unit. And none of this for, so it doesn't even seem like a concern for now. That being said, I'd like to actually look at our actual application here and the spirit of it. So Elizabeth has obviously been a teacher at the school for many years now, and in my opinion, one of the best things in the education system in this county. However, that does not pay very well, and it would be nice to, on occasion, have the option to have another source of income, which is the whole intent of this. And while we've talked about doing long-term rentals, we've also really enjoyed having the opportunity to have guests hop in, because we have a lot of friends out of town that come in and stay with us on occasion, so that's kind of our intent, and I won't ramble on too much more than that. If anybody's curious about anything, I'm more than happy to answer questions.
Can I ask as a member of the public again on this one? It's open to questions. Okay, so your application says one bedroom in our house with shared kitchen in the living area, or the entire house if we were traveling or vacating. I agree. You know, I'm Scott's Captain's a single family dwelling. But then it says, or the accessory dwelling unit. And so that's at the same time. That, let me back up. The fact that there's eating an accessory dwelling on that property that has certificate of occupancy is a violation.
That's what we brought up whenever we got the permit for that. And this is a conversation that we can have elsewhere.
Exactly. But I'm stating it from the public.
Absolutely.
That accessory dwelling unit is a violation of the deed restriction.
Gotcha.
That's it.
Does anyone else have any comments? No.
I see a complete application. I don't have any questions.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Okay, so we're going to just move on through these.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, are we going to open anything up for them for next month so they can talk to Bill also? And do you, I should have asked for that, or do you want to be back on the agenda next month, or do you want to?
Well, we've got plenty of time to decide that, so
yeah.
We'll just have the parties,
okay.
All the parties talk, and
okay.
See what they can, what conclusion they come to, do
okay.
What they do.
So then we will move on with the conceptual plan from Fox Grove Subdivision Amendment. And Curtis, are you going to speak, or is Daniel?
I will quickly introduce it, and then Daniel
Thank
will.
You.
I can quickly go through it.
Where are you, Daniel?
I'll be
right there.
Okay, let me come on up, and I'll just run through it real quickly, and then you can take over. Okay, this is just a conceptual plan, so it's very bare bones. It's the lot number 6 up there at the top. The application is complete. It's being certified by Daniel as the manager of Fox Grove LLC. What is Horizon Investment?
That was the water. I sent over just the information of the water, and the water is currently held in Horizon Investment. Basically, just showing proof of water. So
Who's the owner of Horizon Investment?
So I'm Matt as well.
What address is 938 South 500 West Orem, Utah?
That's my old address.
Okay, so you were at Orem before you came down here? Okay. Okay, so Horizon owns the water right Fox Grove owns
the ground.
The ground.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Go for it.
One lot subdivision, and access would be from the new road that was put in. And just to clarify, because, you know, kind of before, one of the potential concerns is accessing, but so lot 6 would not inhibit access for remainder. So we've got lot 5, there's also D's lot that also have access there, and then there would be Penny's old lot, I guess you could say that, where the well is. I own that lot as well, but that's a separate lot, and so that would keep 4 lots would be accessed from that road, and that road would have a maintenance agreement. I think everything else is pretty much on the plan map.
And lot 5 is accessible from the south? Is
that no, lot the south access point is now gone.
Okay.
For this subdivision purpose. What we did is the bottom corner lot is I transferred my rights to that access to that lot in specific, and then worked out a deal with the neighbors. So that's...
So you'll access lot 5 by going around?
Yes, and that's how I currently access it, yes.
So when you, just so I don't forget, I made a little note, the little pink circle there. It says 50-foot right-of-way and easement. So when you redo this plat, can you change that to show that it ends and then mark where it ends?
Yes, and there's and it's hard to see because of topography, but up from there, right below Kirk Hoffman's lot, you see a turnaround right there. That's where it would end. So that access point there would be, so that would be a gate there, basically going into my property and an access to Dee's property.
Okay, so you have a hammerhead up by Hoffman's lot?
Yeah, it's a roundhouse.
We'll get into all this, because there'll be a lot of those kinds of things up straight now. The preliminary plat, the list is long, but this is just to introduce the concept.
Yeah. So this plat that you have there, this was the approved plat that was on the subdivision from the front. And so what the surveyor did is they basically just added lot 6 on there. They basically just drew a lot. So everything else that was on there was potentially... But again, we can adjust it and fix it however you guys would like. I have no problem with it.
So lot 6 is phase 2?
Yes.
Okay.
So right now lot 6 is part of lot 5?
Correct.
Okay. This is so... As far as the conceptual plan goes, there was something about a prospective fire, new fire hydrant. So is that?
Got it. So you see top.
Yes. Would you please point to things?
Oh, yeah.
You
bet.
Thank you.
Can you see the laser?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So right here is the new fire hydrant. So the future build site that is from my father-in-law, he's looking at building, it'd be right here. And so the fire hydrant we put here, which would be within 600 feet. So
400.
600 to the house, 400 to the lot, is my understanding.
I'll check that.
Okay. So,
that's the lot.
So yes, this would be the lot. So, the fire hydrant would then come up and be within 600 feet of his build site.
Is the fire hydrant installed?
No. So, based on approval, then we would go ahead and get it installed. The engineering is pretty much done based on where we agree the fire hydrant, then the engineering can be finished up pretty quick. So.
And then will you address your plan for the water?
So water is coming from the well right here that I've got a share for my current residents, and then there's also another culinary right, and so that's the one that's being held under Harley's Investments, and I would sign that over to this lot, and then they'll be able to access the water there.
Because right now, that's the 2, almost 3 acre feet water right, but it's aggregated into one right?
No, there's actually 3 different rights.
Oh, okay.
It's got its own...
Okay, it's got its own number?
Yeah, okay. Send the number right over to it. So that would take care of water, fire, access. If there's any other comments.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the conceptual planting looks good. I just have a question on what I'd like to see in the next phase, which is what the requirements is. You know, we have a irrigation line here, right? It comes down, and I believe it's on the 50-foot easement. We'll have to look.
There's actually no easement on that because it ends right there.
Through your property? Where? It runs right along the property line here. That's the irrigation line.
My understanding is the one that comes from your guys' place.
Yeah, it covers all of the other part of the
property. Yeah, it dead ends right there. So it comes on my property and it's dead ends.
But there should be an easement, the, you know, no buildings within 50 feet of that irrigation line.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have to check with Boldy Farm instead.
Okay.
But
this is the line that goes to where the shut-off is on the...
It ends here. Yeah, it turns on right up here, ends here, but there's also, it's not only our irrigation line, the irrigation line that feeds all of Lower Boulder is within, it's like 2-3 feet away from that. And so that easement definitely stands because it provides all of the irrigation for Lower, the lower part of the valley. So the top that will be shown, and then my other question, and this is, you know, this actually is, oh no, my land's got it. Okay, anyway, I will show. This has to do with this ditch that goes right along the property line and it goes a little bit into lot 6.
Okay.
So it's hard to see, but it comes across, kind of by your fire hydrant, it comes across, runs down the property line, and comes out here. In the last I looked at that, and I talked to Mr. Slight when he was starting to build on his property, which is lot
2.
Yeah. Yeah, that ditch wasn't functioning, right? And there's, it says on your map that there's subterranean water, which is true. But on years where we have a large runoff like we did this year, it's surface water. And the natural drainage goes right down the middle of those lots that you've already subdivided. So I guess my statement is that if that ditch worked, there wouldn't be that problem. And since that ditch impedes on lot 6, I think that it applies to phase 2. Just
okay. And then we can, right, and so we can show. So what we have right here, you see this line right here?
Yeah, that ditch is the other one. That one, I'm talking about the other one, so that comes through Abby's.
Okay, and then we can just show that.
And it's there.
Access.
It's just not
water here.
Oh, gee. Yeah, so you've got surface water, which is to say it's a surface water.
And I'll recommend to him, don't put his house right over that, unless he wants it.
It would be a big expense. That's a lot.
Well, I've seen it, you know, houses with a creek going through, but I don't recommend it.
So, Josie, I need to know this information. So, there's an irrigation pipeline. Is that? Can you show me where that is?
Yeah, it goes right along this property line, right up here. That's you know, what was the farm, which was the Philadelphia Golden Irrigation Company, not Farmstead. I'm sorry, I misstated. That's through here, right? But it also is the irrigation line that it's very large.
Okay.
8-inch line that goes all the way down the road, right? And it follows
this line here?
No, this right here.
So it's not shown on here?
It's a ditch. Yeah, it's not shown yet. It's supposed to be on the next map. It's not required in the conceptual plan, but it is in the next one.
Yeah, there runs the property line between Schaus and Cohen's.
Yeah. And so there's an easement on there. I believe it's 50, but we'll have to, you know, don't check that.
We've got to have that.
But my, you know, natural, for me, is that this natural water course, see this ditch right here? It shows the finish line. It's not functioning. And so the natural water course comes right through here. I think, oh, we have a lot. Do you guys know that? And so, you know, do you have standing water there?
Not right now.
But one more. But you could.
We're not mad about it.
Yeah, I know, right? Water's a wonderful word.
There's cattails.
But, you know, when this landowner wasn't happy about it, so, you know, I just, and since that ditch impedes here, I think it's appropriate to base to just have a discussion, so that's why I bring it up.
I'll show it on there. We'll have the surveyors, they can find out exactly where it comes through. And I'll keep the same language for phase two as on phase one, just letting it know on the deed or on the flat that it's got water. Yeah, don't build on it.
And I guess, you know what, that said, you're going to have the same thing on that ditch that does come down next to your place.
Right. Yeah, I'll have my own easement through there for access from my seawater.
Okay.
And the preliminary plat requires full engineering, including drainage. And so they have to account for all that. So if there's active water going through there, that has to be accounted for. If there's an irrigation pipeline, then we have to get the irrigation company, look at the easement, see how wide it is, describe it. And it's not a matter of keeping the house clear of it. It has to be on, it has to be a no-build zone described on the plat.
And so approved as such. Does engineering also cover well and septic for existing properties?
For the engineering?
Yeah.
The PERT test is the only part that that really covers, not the septic itself, but the PERT test is what's required at this stage. But it's a fairly extensive list of what's required on the preliminary plat, and we'll go through that in detail and need all the local knowledge we can get to make sure that we don't leave problems behind, either in surface water or irrigation pipelines.
One of the questions I had was, is there any concerns or maybe need further clarification on the access for Lot 6? Are you guys okay with the proposed access?
I don't either.
Wasn't that road approved during the prior?
It is, and I'm still under the four lots access from it, so I just wanted to clarify that and make sure you guys are on board with that. So.
Well, we'll look at all of that on the preliminary plat as we go through it. This is just a conclusion.
So when you say the four accesses, the building, and that top one's access is the one on the road, it's Lot 6. And then the,
that top
right
one actually
accesses from that other one. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Does anyone have any other questions? Is
that
no. That? Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
Okay, so we'll move on to the conceptual plan for Sugarloaf Farm subdivision.
Do you want me to introduce it?
Sure.
Is that okay? Yeah, this is very straightforward, so I'm just going to have Josh introduce himself and the plan.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. My name's Joshua Owen. I know a fair amount of you in here, so grew up in Boulder Town. I actually went to school in this room here, so it's been a while since I've been here, but. Well, thanks for letting me present here. This is just, as it was introduced, just a concept plan. So I think we've put together the basics, access, water, fire. This plot of land is 80 acres. The subject property is known as Deer Ranch, or some people would call it Lovatos Old Ranch. So what we're looking at is 2 5-acre lots. There you go, 10 acres total, and that's on the far southwest corner. Access comes in by Filer's house, and it goes back. We look at it as just a private road at this point to be maintained with a maintenance agreement. So as far as water, we have three different wells that are indicated there. The lowest one, 972251, is just basically allotted for a single family house. So what we were looking at doing is partitioning or basically granting access from other water rights we have to that as a potential for bringing the culinary water to the 2 5-acre sites. And fire suppression is a question mark I have. I'm kind of looking into that, so I'll feedback on that, especially if we go with the well. if that's viable.
Have you met Pete Benson, the fire marshal?
Yeah, to do it with a well requires a very large tank.
The whole tank,
right? To do it, you know, up to the full spec. Right. But we could probably work something out. And I think probably what the town needs to do is work on basically following the WUI, the Wetland Urban Interface Code, so that basically you're doing fire prevention beforehand, so there's no fire suppression. Since there's a lack of fire suppression water, there'd be fire prevention from
passing the drive.
Preventative maintenance. Yeah, preventative. Yeah, so that would be the idea. It seems like it's a long way in to run a hybrid.
Yeah. Right.
And the tank would be really huge to do the fire flows that the IDC talks about. So, figure something out.
Okay.
We'll talk about that.
Right. And I'm curious, is there any precedence in town where someone has done fire suppression off a well?
Not that I know of. No. Not at that IBC, you know, the fire code levels. It's pretty.
There's a model adjoining town.
What's going on?
Up on the basin.
Oh, okay.
With 8,000 gallon storage tanks on each well. But we have
a
shared
well. Still doesn't reach the. What IFC says. You
know. No, it doesn't even come close to a public system, but they're all private systems.
Yeah, that's, you know, yeah. Yeah, the fire code says basically it's a very large volume for, you know, per minute.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Per,
so
an hour. Right. So it's a big tank.
So the way I understand it is that going into the preliminary plot, we would just determine if it's viable.
Yeah,
if it's viable.
There's a feasibility question.
Right.
To be creative, and maybe something like what Curtis has on Mesa would be, you know, be nice to have. You know.
That's become more and more common in all parts of the state. Some counties are doing that now, just to say, well, a certain amount of storage.
Yeah, and it's because basically it's not. Now,
Josh brought that up in a meeting that might be a possibility too. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's. To be creative.
Right. Okay. Alternatively, what I've noticed is we have, my understanding is we come with city water with a pipe back from over Boulder Road all the way back.
You know, if you're even, you know, considering the possibility of subdividing further, that would be
to the infrastructure now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as access, I started to look into, I guess, the consideration of emergency services. So if anyone's familiar with the property, if you were to have to take a fire truck in here, there's a big flat spot here, so I believe that's sufficient for a turnaround. And then the subdivided lots would be here. The next turnaround is this kind of circular drive there. And then I have kind of a question mark in my own mind about here. There's just basically a flat out spot. And I wonder if that would be sufficient for a fire truck. So you could probably get it at one of the hammerheads. So hopefully that suffices for emergency services.
Yeah.
Kind of work that out.
The details.
Right.
What are your general slopes on this two opposite?
So it's basically nestled up against the foothills. So going into the foothills, this kind of shows you. I would say I walked it yesterday. It looks to me about like 75% of the lots are relatively flat, which would probably constitute under that 30% slope. This might be, in my opinion, between the 15 to 30, with certain areas that could be build sites, but certainly as it goes back towards the backmost perimeter line, it's in probably beyond that 30%.
So when you do preliminary plan, when you do your survey, you're required to do 2-foot topos, and that'll start to show you where it goes from 0 to 15, 15 to 30, and then 30 and beyond.
Right.
And above 30% is no build zone, no driveways, no nothing. Mm-hmm. It's, quote, maintained in a natural state. Between 15 and 30% is a sensitive lands part. You are allowed to put improvements on it, but there are some restrictions on it, some soils tests required, some geological tests required, whatever. And so, but those are details that you'll get into as you go.
Okay.
But from this, it looks like there's enough, there's plenty of land under that 15% number where improvements could be located and homes could be located, and then even above 15%, between 15 and 30, to take advantage of views and stuff. Now, some of it will be the preliminary, come into play a preliminary plat. Some of it will be strictly with at the building permit stage,
right,
with whoever wants to build home.
Sure. All right. Any other questions? Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Okay, so then we're going to go on to Section 11, Building Permit Amendment to Zoning Ordinance. And Chris, are you going to kind of, you noticed, are you going to talk about this? Or?
Yeah, and the first thing I'm going to talk about is the application, because it was submitted by the mayor.
Yes.
And he accompanied a letter with it.
Okay.
And he already took it to the town, the draft to the town council, and they agreed in principle with the idea. So I sent the letter around to everyone. Rather than going into detail, do you have any questions about it, or Steve can address it, or?
I suppose the 200 sheds that already exist will be grandfathered in.
Yeah.
The what?
200 sheds that exist will be grandfathered in.
Oh.
So this is more of a consolidation of some ordinances that have been passed, maybe not incorporated exactly into the new one. The $1,000 amount was passed 1996, I think, so it's not probably applicable anymore to a lot of. So what we want to do is clean that up to make it make sense, so that people would know a building permit from an approval, a project approval. So it's more or less just kind of cleaning that section up and making it much more clear to fit with how we operate. That's what I'm saying.
So let's, so, go ahead, sir.
I just have a question. It says, towards the bottom here, no changes have recently been made to the process or requirements, but the council requests that the commission clarify such ongoing problems as the issuance of building permits for years. I thought that kind of was not our problem anymore, that it had gone to the county and to
well, care. it's still something I think we need to clarify so people know.
Yeah.
More than anything. And yurts were passed. Well, there's definitely, I don't want to pass it too much again, but right. A resolution was passed just saying you could use material. It never said you could build a yurt that wasn't up to code.
Yeah.
But a lot of people think that's what it, so we're trying to just iron out all the little things that have come up over the years.
Right.
And this is a good time because we're codifying our ordinances and we want them to be as clean as we can moving forward.
Yeah.
This is one that's not very clean back then.
Yeah.
It's a little confusing, especially when you look back and say, well, were the previous ordinances incorporated into the newest version? And they weren't, totally.
Yeah.
So what do you do with leftover stuff, I guess. We just need to.
So you're trying to close some loopholes, and it also, the town isn't liable if someone's chicken coop burns or something like that. That's a project application.
Yeah, making it just more clear when you need a project approval, when you need a building permit.
Yeah.
Because it kind of goes with the way we do business, but the ordinance doesn't spell it out very well.
Right now, it's really confusing because I'm the one that's doing the intake on these, and
seems like it.
And yeah, I'm trying to set speed records too. So basically, what we need to do, it says project permit and building permit. It's kind of muddled, and then the section of the zoning ordinance, chapter 11, that governs building permits, is pretty clear on what's required. But it doesn't address the project permit. So the thought here was that let's have a project permit that's separate. So no matter what you do, you build a little chicken coop or whatever, technically speaking, you call the zoning administrator and say, hey, this is what I want to do. Okay, that's fine. Let's do a little project permit. Here's what I want. There's a little plot plan attached to it. This is going to tell me whether the setbacks are in place. And you're going to certify that you're within 30 feet of the front and 10 feet of the sides. This is going to look at the slopes. Where are you going to locate it? Or is it going to violate a 30% slope? Anything like that. The height limitations, et cetera. If you're going to be near an irrigation line, is it going to too near a ditch? Like, you know, a sauna was built, and I think it's okay, but it was very close to the irrigation ditch down on BJ's property, and it has no power, no plumbing, no mechanical, so, but it should have had a building permit. So it's under 200 square feet. So the project permit is a way for people to know that they're legal. It's a simple matter, a simple application. We'll go through the, I don't know if we, I'll talk to Pete about this. I don't know if we need the fire marshal on this. I'm not sure on a shed. You know, the reason that, in addition to this other stuff, Boulder Mountain Lodge just applied for a building permit for a tough shed, a storage shed. And it was like, well, they're not going to inspect that. There's no electrical, plumbing, or mechanical in it. And yet they had to go through a building permit in the county and da-da-da-da. And so in order to make this reasonable for the residents, we can do a very simple project permit. Then that project permit will determine whether you need a building permit. And then a building permit in Boulder is a two-step process. One, I'll call local consent. And that does many things, the project permit with setbacks, heights, et cetera, that it meets the zoning ordinance, irrigation easements, et cetera. Then, when we sign off on that, they mail it to the county, and the county then and only then will issue the actual building permit, which is your inspection part of it, and you pay the fees to them, and that's how they're compensated. And they do this by contract with the town. So that's basically it in a nutshell. So section 1102 is just trying to insert the part, and this is very, very rough first pass just to get the conversation started. I want to do more research in other jurisdictions and so forth and make sure we're getting this right. But so you'll have a project permit and you'll have a building permit. We'll spell out the function of each one. The rest of it, everything that's not underlined or struck out is just the way it reads right now. So everything has to be IBC, you adopt all the state codes. They're listed in the state statutes. Then you come down here to the exemptions. And so agricultural buildings are already exempt if you meet a state statute. And the state statute is really a lot more specific than people think it is. Plus, our town ordinance say you can only get that exemption in GMU. And so a lot of people say, well, this is an ag building or whatever, and generally speaking, it's not. Generally speaking, an ag building, under this definition, it would be a hay storage barn or something. No mechanical, plumbing, or electrical. Then most jurisdictions that I researched up in Salt Lake County, all the towns, have kind of adopted this 200 square feet or less. So the typical tough shed, they come with a steel frame under them, you know, you can put them on blocks or whatever, and it's not for human habitation. They're strictly for storage or chicken coops or for livestock, animals or whatever. And so they're not for human habitation, and they don't require electrical, plumbing, or mechanical. And so the county wouldn't want to inspect it anyway.
I have two questions. People are using a lot now, what are the big storage containers?
Mm-hmm.
Are those under 200 square feet?
I don't think they are.
No,
they're for that one.
I don't know.
What are they?
320 is the standard.
Right, so that's something that's going to need a building.
So they're 320?
Mm-hmm. Your typical 40-foot length is 320. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a very, that's a very good point. Maybe we should insert those.
That's not a structure. It's...
Yeah, that's the...
If it's strictly for storage and not for habitation, now if they're going to turn it into a dwelling, that's a different matter.
Oh, sure, any engineering.
But do you want me to look at inserting that? That would make sense, because I've got hoop houses in here.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
It's because they already exist.
Okay. Yeah.
And the other question is project permits. There's no fee involved, is there?
I don't...
Never mind. I don't remember if we put it. We just did our new fee table on all of them. We had no fees on any permits at all. So we did that a couple months ago. I don't remember.
And somebody tried to pay the other day, too, so I'm not going to do it.
I mean, I can understand the building, right, but it seems a little excessive for, I mean, so many of us who are living on land have, coops, greenhouses, sheds, and so on. That will add up to an in-pocket cost, which doesn't seem legit to me.
Well, what we considered was the permit takes a certain amount of processing paperwork time, and we try to keep it at a minimum.
Yeah.
How else am I going to get paid, man?
So,
same as me. Pay to have a copy.
I mean, they can be minimal. I mean, even minimal charges for budget.
$5
application.
I just know how people feel about that as long as more work, more money.
So on a project permit, it would kind of make sense, since it's just something telling you, hey, you don't need a building permit and go through all these other hoops.
Yeah.
To not have a fee. But that's...
And we wouldn't have a fee on a project permit, because it's not even... There isn't...
It's not a separate permit, yeah. Okay. Temporary structures, I'll add, or we'll talk about adding cargo containers under number 4, because they are temporary, because they can change their mind and pick them up and move them away. But not, once again, not for habitation. And then you've got the $1,000 thing there, that was put in back in 1996 or 99, did you say?
96.
Yeah, and so there has been a little bit of inflation since then. So we probably want to change that. And I noticed some of the jurisdictions, they go through, kitchen counters. A major remodel requires it, especially if you're doing mechanical, plumbing, or electrical as part of your remodel. But if you're recarpeting, obviously not. You're planning your cabinets. Or whatever. So I'll look at some of that language and try and come up with more or whatever. I don't think we want to get as detailed as they get, but we can say anything over a certain amount that requires mechanical, plumbing, or electrical, then requires a building permit, because those are safety issues. Anyway, I've got a long way to go on this still.
Do salvage materials have value?
I think what they did the last time, and there's no saying you have to follow this, but where they landed when they amended the ordinance, whenever they amended it, I'm not sure when.
I think 2 years later, 98 maybe.
Because they said the same thing, and then they came back and said, well, we don't want you to say it under $1,000 in cost because of the salvage materials, so they take over a certain value.
Yeah.
So you can find salvage, but you're creating value with your labor and the materials, and now you're creating something that has value, so I don't know.
So it was cost slash value.
Yeah.
Which is
99. Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, whenever you put a dollar amount, this is an ordinance. When is that dollar amount going to be the same thing? When is it out of date? Then you have to amend the ordinance.
Right.
So if there's a way to do it without a dollar amount, it's probably better, but it's, I don't know. So anyway, we wanted you guys to consider how we work that around, so yeah, it works for...
I just know I work for free when I build land things, so there's no value there for me, what I mean? So it's like, I'm just saying that,
and if you value
build something out of salvage material, like collecting stuff from the dump, and I built it on my own time, it's under $1,000.
Yeah, but the value of the materials hasn't.
There's equity in that too.
But how do you, who equates that? Parties just try to understand. That's pretty interesting.
So it might be just easier then to leave it, you know, exempt, as many things that make sense to exempt, leave out the dollar amount and hinge it more toward human habitation with mechanical, plumbing, or electrical. Because those are the main things that they're looking for. And Jared's not going to inspect anything but those things anyway.
Anybody else have any comments?
So you guys are the starting point to amend the ordinance. That's why it's coming to you.
Yeah. And so do we, is that something that we're going to put on the agenda? So as far as next month, we'll need to put that on the agenda?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have something to you as early as I can. Keep going on this and try and ask it to be on the December agenda. I'm gone January and February, so we'll either get it done by then or you can pick it up without me or however.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so then the next thing is continued discussion on zoning ordinance table of uses.
Peg, you sent some additions here?
I did not. There were some suggestions.
Suggestions?
I brought up some old business, one was the economic building, and then the other was recycling. Yeah, and then there was a couple other, well, I've only included in.
Yeah, art studio, writing stable, shooting range, laundromat, car wash, and recycling. From the land use groups.
Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking of the other thing I was going to give you that I didn't. Could you read those again, Chris?
Sorry. So, number one is performance venue. Number two, art studio. Number three, riding stables. Four, shooting range. Five, laundromat. Six, car wash. And so, recycling center staging.
As I said, those were things that were simply brought up in our land use group 2 years ago.
Correct. Should they be included, in other words, in the table of uses of your community?
Okay.
Is that something you want to go through now?
We made it so. We made it through the end of last month, right? I wish I had the table of uses that you...
You made it through the end of the existing table of uses.
Right.
So you've commented on everything, and you've discussed the allowances and the various zones.
Right.
And through all that.
Yeah.
And the thing that you were talking about that I did not prepare for you tonight was a summary table of those.
And you gave us a copy last month of them, and
yes, and I haven't added anything to that.
I wish I had that.
I have it. Do you want it?
You do?
Yeah.
It's in the 3 minutes if you have those, but.
Well, what I'm thinking is, thank you. Let's see, we have made the changes that we wanted to in this also, right?
Mm-hmm. You've talked about a lot of things. I don't think you've made firm decisions.
Okay.
No, we've been through everything one time. Now what there is to start hunting down these applications and perhaps address some of the feedbacks that have come up.
Okay, so then what I do want to look at then are these things that we want to add onto that list? Is that what we're saying? Performance venue, art studio, writing stables, are we talking about adding these things to the table of uses?
That would be the question before you.
Yeah, we want to consider if we should be adding these.
Okay, so then let's go through it basically. So a performance venue.
This is referring specifically to a building, like at least a three-season type building with a stage. It's more the, it's the stage aspect in an enclosed space. It's kind of what it boils down to. Audience area, stage, a performance venue. Because there are a lot of local events that happen that have to do with dance or theater, and those participants have sort of not been able to fully use the only other space they have, which is the big room in here. I mean, it's not, it is conducive. So that's why that was an item that was mentioned as it would be a new facility, obviously, but it would be a new required use.
Hmm.
So we would need to find out.
Yeah,
maybe we would decide where, decide what zones that would be allowed.
Yeah.
And so when I think about that, what does it imply? It implies a lot of parking.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of like a commercial zone.
Right. I mean, there may be a noise associated that wouldn't be desirable in residential zones. So yeah, I would say conditional use and at least a starting point, conditional use in commercial zone.
Do we want to add it? I mean, do you
is
feel like
you have to consider
the priority? And yeah. And
I don't know. I mean, does it fit with the culture of the town? Yeah.
Well, I think it's something that we could look at.
Yeah.
Adding. But I think we need to get more information on it, too.
Okay.
We could look at other examples.
Okay. So let's define it and hold it for the moment as a possibility of conditional use in commercial zone, and then we can go from there.
Do you want to pull up other examples for the next meeting?
Yeah.
Have everyone look at them up?
Yeah.
Are you saying a performance venue would be a conditional use in a commercial zone only?
I guess the starting point for conversation.
We need to define it.
Really, I feel like it has to be defined before you can place it.
And we don't have any commercial zones. We don't have any commercial.
Yeah,
I mean, we don't even have any commercial property.
Well, it'd be like anything that we say, is if somebody wants to do it,
like, yeah, say, okay,
they're changing the zone.
Right.
Well, we've already had someone bring up a preliminary idea for one that's not in a commercial zone.
Right off of Highway 12. So, I mean, it seems like an appropriate location that would be considered for rezoning.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's probably a GM.
So, I mean, I think before you can even look at a zone, you would have to have a definition and then see where it fits in and then look at zones. I think talking about the zones of it is jumping ahead.
But we do want to consider putting it on the table of users. And so we'll look it up, look at things for to talk about it next month. Art studio.
It's appropriate too. It's been, we've had a couple already. To me, it's more of an that's a home occupation.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That's what I think.
And maybe we just make sure that that gets put into it, because we've been talking about home occupation and better defining that. We could pull it into
that. Put that into the home occupation. Okay, and then writing stables.
Does that mean for public use?
Yeah.
Writing stables, yeah.
Yeah, it would be an income for
okay.
Someone else.
So, like, indoor writing?
It was just, these were never defined in the group. It was just an income possibility for someone ostensibly suitable for an ag area and, yeah, housing of horses and tech, so space user.
So, I've seen it a lot.
Yeah.
In different communities where people have a farm set up, a ranch set up, and give lessons. I mean, it's, I think it's applicable here.
Yeah, okay. And it would, same thing, I mean, in zoning, it would be the same.
Yeah, consider what zones to put it in, and where would that general, you know, GMU, most likely, maybe in our lower density areas.
Yeah. And larger, I mean, you're looking at larger pieces of property.
Yeah.
So we put a limit on that, or
not a limit, but
Define it.
Define it, yes. So we have to most, I guess the thing with all, any of these is that we, well, except for laundromat, well, except for, there's different kinds of laundromats too. So we would want to define all of these and decide where to put them. Right?
Yeah.
So I guess the thing is with any of these that we should look up what's, you know, what there is, and then talk about them next. Is that okay?
Yeah.
You know, as far as the car wash and recycling center, I know we have that. Was that ever set aside as a recycling center, that parking lot there? Not really.
Parking lot?
You know where it was, as far as where the garbage, it's not a parking lot, but across from Halls.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was designated, and there were big plans for that area, including a big building and the whole shebang, but.
Recycling
doesn't pay. Yeah, so it kind of fell apart, but the idea of having a staging center for reuse, recycle, you know, whatever.
We have that, already have that in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crushed glass. A crushed glass staging area.
Oh, okay.
So the thing we talked about, putting, were you going to track all this stuff and put it together? I know it's all working.
That's what I did offer to do, which I did not do.
Okay.
But I
will
start it. So the thing that you started last time, I just need to finish up.
We just have to add last time.
Last time.
Yeah.
So we, it's just kind of a summary table that
yeah.
So you have to look at all the minutes and individually.
It's very helpful. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So then could we go ahead and add these?
If you want, yes. Nice. You need to say what you.
I think before you add this one into that table that you're holding, I think we should next month, after people have an opportunity to look them up, to get other examples and compare them, to come up and have some definitions that we have to come up with that before they should go into that point. But the ones that we did last month can get added to that, and we can compare those, in my opinion.
Okay.
But to put these ones in, because some of us might say, oh, this also is, it's already covered in one of the already existing ones.
Yeah.
Or, no, I think it needs to be its own independent table of use.
Yeah. Okay.
So I have a suggestion question for everybody, and that is, once Peg kindly does put all this stuff together, we might consider planning a working group just on this.
I think so, too. So the other thing, too, is that
I agree.
If there's any other definitions that seem to come up, like we should have that as an ending, like next month, that's it for the any definitions that we create or decide to put in there. Is that? And then we can go from there. So if anybody comes up with any other definitions that they find, we could talk about those along with these that we're looking at. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
One quick comment on your working group.
Yeah.
Are you talking about your members being part of a working group?
If it's three or more, it has to be open to the public, right?
Yeah.
Right. Or you can, any two could combine with citizens and make them part of your working group. So you have two working groups, and you get two planning commission members in each one, but you just can't have three planning commission in one working group.
Oh, I see.
Unless it's an advertised public meeting.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can decide how we want to do that next month.
Yeah, let's think about it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out an efficient way to handle this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You're trying to rough out definitions with the public sitting around board is difficult.
Yeah.
Right.
Just one suggestion, we could split that table of uses up, do two people per working group, go from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that way everybody's involved, but it's split, the workload's split.
Well, I think the thing, especially with Curtis being gone too, I think if we were to get these things pulled together for December, and then go from what we already have here too, and then work on those in January and February when Curtis is going to be here.
Yeah.
And we can also have meetings, we were talking about working meetings before we come to the meeting.
That's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a working group.
Exactly. So we would come at 5 or 5:30 and then be working on those, and then
go on to the meeting, like in January and February. Does that sound good? So we'll kind of encapsulate everything in December, and then move on to having maybe a working group. And that sound good?
May I make one more suggestion that you maybe consider? You're embarking on a pretty ambitious program here, basically revising the entire table of uses. And, you know, so far what I've done is an ordinance here, an ordinance there, and I know how much work it takes just to do one of them. And so it is quite an ambitious program. So as you consider your working groups, I would consider including town council members too, so you get more of a team effort, so that as you start to get your way through this, you have a sense of, okay, it's not just, you know, your thoughts, but it's also their thoughts, so that you have a blend, so you know your efforts are, you know, going to count where there, because you're going to recommend and they're going to be the ultimate decider. So you might consider, you know, something like that too.
Where, and so if we did that, would we want to look at meetings that, since the town council comes on the first Monday, or Thursday, we're on the second, would we just have a working meeting, set up a working meeting that we could all come together and focus on that? Would that be even better?
Well, remember how we did the general plan?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that we do...
We include council.
Yeah, I'm just saying the more inclusive you can be about the people who are ultimately going to decide this, the better off, the better product you're going to get, and it's, you know, more better chance you have of them being on board and agreeing with you. Just a thought.
Yeah, well, if we both have quorums, though, and you come on one night in one room.
Yeah.
Well, they can have two, they can have any two members in the working group, and you can have any two members in the working group, and it can just be a working group.
Yeah.
So, and so you could have two of them, and that would include, you know, two and two town councilmen. Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah.
To also think about that we'll be getting new planning commission members in the, and right. So to figure out how to get everybody incorporated and on the same page.
I don't want to be flocking here.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it until you get those new.
And then, so we're hoping to have some that in December, you guys...
Yeah, the notice has been put out by
today.
People need to apply by December 2nd.
Yeah.
I think it was. And then we'll fill those positions at our next regular meeting. And then those people will start in January. And they'll fill Perry's and Elizabeth's.
And is this your last meeting?
She'll have
a year?
No, I'll have December.
December. So we'll have you for December. Okay. Good to know.
So you'll have two new people, hopefully, in January.
Okay. Well, you might as well get them on board, you know. So how does that sound? Okay. And then we'll decide on how we want to do the working meetings in December, too. So it's all kind of taken care of. And then we'll be ready to move into 2020. Yeah.
I have one more request while I'm being pesky. I'm not a professional planner, but, you know, I've been reading up on some of this stuff and so forth. And as you all heard when you attended the rural, those of you that attended the rural planning group meetings, you heard them say, beware of the conditional use kind of language. And I don't really have an answer to that, because you need the control feature that they're saying, hey, don't rely so heavily on those, they're dangerous, et cetera, et cetera. So I was talking to Caden Figgins, the county planner, and he's really into this stuff. He's trying to become a professional planner, and he's doing a good job. He attends all these seminars and meetings, and he's doing it for the county. And the county has something like 500, he told me, outstanding conditional uses. Now, they got 5,000 people, too. And we have only have 250, but anyway, he's had a lot of occasion to deal with these, and he has some real thoughts on them. And he said, you know, I'd be willing to come over for your December meeting and give you a brief presentation on my thoughts, and then answer any questions you have. Because my as I hear you talk about the way you'd like to approach this, I hear you saying, okay, we're going to make it in commercial zone, and we're going to make conditional use. So there's two hoops that a property owner has to jump through. But just as someone just said, we don't have any, well, we have very limited commercial property. We don't have any commercial property you could just buy tomorrow and put a laundromat on, et cetera. And so what I want to ask people like Caden is, and I wish we had the guy that did the exercise with us, it's a true professional from Montana, to ask questions like this, and that is, when you do it that way, are you building stress into the system? You know, if it's an anti-growth thing and it becomes transparently an anti-growth thing, I worry about it being able to stand up to a court challenge, because planning is all about balancing the interests of the town and growth with the interests of individual property owners and their rights. And so you have to find ways to strike that balance. So anything we can do to educate ourselves along those lines so that when you get done with all this work, we've got a product that, you know, we feel pretty comfortable can stand up to a challenge. Anyway, so if you're for it, we could start with Caden coming over and telling us what he knows about conditional uses. And if you want, he can talk about zoning too.
I would love that. Yeah, that would be great. Okay. And then I have all this paperwork for, we just want to be Boulder Workshop. And that's another thing that we could, when we go into those meetings in January and February, is to have something, you know, that we can, like we did at the other meeting, that we have in our hands that we can use as a basis for going through these.
Peg is going to have a good outline, right, of all the things you've talked about to give you...
Yeah, but she's
talking
about the decision process.
Oh.
How we need you weigh...
Oh, the way you did that, yeah.
Yeah, I still have all this paperwork. Yeah. And I do like that idea.
If you think anything in numerical value, but across the board, so...
I think the thing, too, is when we change these things, is keeping the verbiage and the wordage at a minimal. Like, trying to get to our point with the least amount of words and confusion, and like you said, you know, so even though we have all these ideas, how do we bring it down to as few words as we can? So, does anybody have any other comments on that? So we'll put that on the agenda too. But before we do that, we'll go ahead and forego this zoning ordinance discussion, and we're going to open it up to the final public comments, if anyone has any final public comments. Okay, that's it. Hackle public comments. Okay, so then for upcoming business for December 12th.
This is not in any order.
Okay. Does it have to be right now?
Not right now, okay. But what is potential? Tell me if it should come off or not. I was assuming a public hearing and your action on the Julian short-term residential.
We have to go forward. They have a complete application.
So I'll go ahead and schedule a public hearing.
Oh, yeah. And we got to reschedule Alex Fuller.
We need to reschedule the public hearing or just...
No, the public hearing is, box has been checked,
right.
And then we'll do a public hearing for Julian.
Oh, reschedule the discussion.
Right. Yeah, because we've got a completed application pending, and
right,
we've given the parties 30 days to discuss their differences, but it's really not the business of the town.
Okay, so that'll be the possible deciding action on that conditional use. A public hearing on the amendment to the zoning ordinance? Section 11?
Yes. If we can get that to the point where, if I can give you something that you're good with, and I'll bounce it off the mayor and make sure that it feels right to them, then we can do a public hearing, and if you're satisfied, you can pass it, and then the town council can take it up and pass it while I'm gone, so we can get that one moved downstream.
Is it too preliminary to have preliminary plans for next month?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we won't see either one of those.
Yeah, no, they have way too much work. I'm not going to speak for them. I guess if they can get it all done, if they really want to hit the boards with it, they might have a preliminary plan. I don't know.
We just have to make a deadline. So.
Yes.
Yeah, that would just be your 10-day before your meeting deadline. There would be a public hearing.
And you need to have it to the insider at least 2 weeks.
It would be ready for public hearing. Right. If they came in with a preliminary plat package, it would have to be 10 days before the meeting.
Yeah. So if they had their plat, we'll look at what they have at that time.
We're almost there now. I mean, 10 days before December 7th or whatever. It's Anyway, decide how to do working meetings for the table of use discussion. I have on here economic opportunity, and I did send out those talking points that Curtis had from last May on that discussion that sort of got sidelined. So that's another thing for you to and just business-wise, Planning Commission, you tell me, typically in December when there hasn't been a big turnover of members, December is when you would decide when you want to have your meetings for the next calendar year, because so Judy can get that published. You may want to wait till you have your two new members so they can be part of the
committee.
Same thing with voting on your chair and vice chair. So those things will be your general. Okay.
Your man that you wanted to bring?
Right, and can we schedule that for 6 o'clock, the county planner, so that
is it possible
he's got a long drive.
Separate, or do you want a part of the meeting itself? I mean, he could come early.
Could he come early?
Call the work meeting, and people can come if they want.
Yeah, I just don't want him to keep him too late. He's got a long drive in the dark.
But he came at 5.
But then he could leave at 6, right?
Yeah,
I mean, when we were done, would that be all right? I mean,
I don't know a schedule. I could bounce it off him and just get back to you.
Could
he go first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially if he came at 5, then we could have him talk to just us.
But have it open to the public.
If you were to.
Yeah.
Who's providing dinner?
You're not.
Yeah, I like
it. Okay. Well, he's going to have the dinner issue himself.
Okay, so then do we have everything covered for the agenda then for the upcoming business? Okay. So
I make a motion to close the meeting.
I second it.
Thanks, guys.
Over to you, Curtis. Wow.
Very efficient. Wow.
Yes.
A lot of stuff.
You have me. Thank you for all your information.
We missed them. Yeah.
Are you going to Costa Rica?
No.
That's the last time. That'll work at pleasure.
You doing good?
I'm good. I'm doing pretty good. Still in the top. We met those today. Way back when, so long.
Saturday, for Saturday,
yep, absolutely.